Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and only dunces would drink this much beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
Fuck it.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys.
It's messy.
Obviously, because we just spilt the beer we just opened.
I'm so glad you used the royal we. Because that was all day. And I'm going to pour us a beer, what's left of it, that I didn't spill on Nate's computer, Nate's pants, and my floor.
But yeah, mostly you're right.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't give a shit.
My wife doesn't listen to this.
What is this?
This is beer. This is from the Abita Brewing Company. It's called Big Easy IPA.
Why
it's
would an you ale, choose such a beer?
It's an ale brewed with lemon. An ale brewed with lemon peels, and we're drinking it because this book takes place in New Orleans, and that's where Abita is. Well, actually, they're in Abita Springs, Louisiana, but that's the only Louisiana brewery.
We're gonna round off.
I actually asked that the specialty beer stores, do you have anything from Louisiana? Is it only Abita? I said, well, that's gonna have to do.
I mean, I know people from New Orleans that say like Abita is the New Orleans beer.
I've actually went to New Orleans last year and drank a shit ton of Abita. It was on tap, like with the same regularity that you see like Brooklyn Lager on tap.
I mean,
tap
they have their own laws, they're gonna have their own beer.
A crazy Napoleonic code.
Parish law or whatever the fuck.
They're the only state with parishes, as opposed to counties. Jeopardy question. It's true. It's a Jeopardy question. Mm-hmm. So it's an IPA brew with lemon peels. It's on the easy drinking side because it's big and easy. And it's 4.5% alcohol by volume. What do you guys think?
It's bitter. Not that strong.
It is an IPA.
We didn't even fucking say the title of the book.
Oh, we didn't. Oh, shit. And we are, today, we are reading A Confederacy of Dunces by, go ahead.
By John Kennedy Toole. Which takes place in New Orleans. So what do you guys think of the beer?
Editing. Let's see. We'll have to just, you know.
Just run on it, man.
No, I always do the first half of the episode. That's going to stay just like that. I don't get a lot of lemon peel out of this.
No.
It smells like, I mean, it tastes like every other IPA.
There's like a palate cleansing cleanness to it. There's something.
It is an IPA.
It is an IPA. It's a big, easy IPA.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that intense. It's a session IPA.
It's not intense, but it's definitely like, that's an IPA.
Definitely. It's not a pale ale. You wouldn't say that.
No. It's a full melanin ale.
Wow. I think this is a little past date, honestly. No, it's not. It says Best Buy January 8th, 2018, which is just
that's
a couple
years
days ago.
Which is actually in the past for when this episode comes out.
That's what I was fucking going for.
Yeah.
It's pretty. It's not old. It's when we were drinking it or would have drunk in it. It's fine.
It's fine, whatever.
I don't even know what that tense would be.
So this book takes place in New Orleans and follows Ignatius J. Riley.
Pretty sure it's
Ignatius P. Riley.
Whatever the fuck his name is.
I thought it was P. too, but then they said J. That's at one point in the book.
I mean, it might have
that
changed
would be a
midway
way
because he died.
Whoa, spoiler.
Mm-hmm. Not the guy in the book.
Well, he's dead too, actually. I mean,
he's not dead. Time is frozen in the book.
We're Googling his middle initial because this is an important J.
That is
J.
the most important.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia.
I was wrong.
Wikipedia, how could I ever doubt you?
It's an awesome cover picture, though. That's a weird.
That design. Is not the original cover.
Why does he have that?
Does look like John
the picture
Candy.
I have is not that.
Why it's not him with a
sword. Why does he have a sword?
No, the one
sword.
You have is
like
him with,
like,
with
a
parrot
like
on him.
Book.
Oh, right, I guess.
And he's eating the hot dog. It's great.
Yeah, that's a good hot dog, though.
So Ignatius J. Riley is a fat fucking asshole who lives in
He's
New Orleans.
Just a dick.
Yeah.
He is awesome though. He lives with his mom. He's like 30-ish.
Yeah, 30 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how old I am. All right, I'm doing better than that guy. So he is a 30-year-old dude, lives at home with his mom in New Orleans, has a degree in like medieval studies or
mm-hmm.
something like that, and
from Tulane.
Yeah, he's in. That's like the only. Like, where's Tulane? I don't even know where that
it's
is.
In New Orleans.
It is
it's
in New
very
Orleans.
Good
it's not.
School.
It's not outside of. It's not Louisiana's. Like,
I think it's in.
If it's not New Orleans, it's New Orleans adjacent.
It's
effectively New Orleans. All
right, fine. So he oh yeah,
no,
you know
because
no,
got
right.
flooded during Katrina.
And you know
and
he also
had to leave.
He's never led. He only left New Orleans once
one
in the thing. So yeah, you're right. Red Stick.
That's a fun name. Red Stick.
It's my Native American name.
Tulane. Also better than one lane university.
So,
what? Shitting balls?
What, my Native American name, I said there's Red Stick, but it's actually Shitting Bull.
Oh, Shitting Bull.
Yeah, because it's bad, yeah. So,
hence the podcast.
You too could have a podcast. So, Ignatius Riley is a fat piece of shit, overeducated, undermotivated asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I'm really missing. I really think
no,
that's pretty
that
fair.
That sums it up.
It's a funny book.
This is... definitely a crazy
farce.
It's definitely just a series of weird shit that happens over and over again.
Yep. A crazy series of events where every single person is really stupid and just does really dumb things.
But Ignacio Riley is not stupid.
He's not academically stupid, for sure. He's,
when I was reading it, because the rest of the characters are written in this, like, literal New Orleans, like, twang for all their words. You kind of have to read it as though the water boy was speaking it. But Ignatius is written very eloquently.
But you need to add some sort of, you know, hillbilly-ness to it.
I mean, yes, technically he's probably spoke like that, but in the book I never imagined him speaking. I'm sure he did. But I could not imagine someone speaking eloquently with a, like, hardcore New Orleans accent.
Well, no, he's not a homeboy, Omega. He's not speaking like that. But he's super smart and rude to people.
He thinks everyone is beneath him.
Yeah, he thinks he's superior to everyone. Yeah,
he's well educated, but he's not, like, a lot of his ideas are terrible.
Well, yeah, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
That's Confederacy of Dunces.
He's Frasier.
Well, I mean, I guess we get to the title later. Like, who is the genius, the true genius in the book?
No one. Everyone is terrible.
You're kind of led to believe it's Ignatius, mm-hmm. that he's the true genius and the Confederacy of Dunces. Or that's his perception, that they're against him.
Sounds like we're talking about the title, the quote of the book, so we'll just...
We should say, yeah, we talked about it before we hit record. Right.
This is the quote... that the author has at the beginning of the book before he starts the narrative.
It's believed that it's called an epigraph.
This is the epigraph, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I'm probably wrong. It's like, that's actually not what it's called. Send us a message. Tell us why we're fucking wrong. At DrunkGuysBC on Twitter.
Is that Nickelback song?
That's Nickelback's mantra. Tell us why we're wrong.
Look at this epigraph.
Here's the quote.
You know, that's fucking... I get it.
Look at this epigraph.
That's fucking terrible.
Every time I make it. All right, so here we go. Here's the quote. I'm pretty sure this was from Jonathan Swift.
Yes, in A Modest Proposal.
All right, well, that's a different podcast episode.
That'd be very short.
Anyway, okay, so, eat babies. When a true genius appears in the world... Sorry, I'll try that again. All right, so here's the quote. When a true genius appears in the world, you will know him by this sign, that all the dunces are in confederacy against him. So that's the quote, right? The way you know someone is really smart is that all the dumb people don't like him. That's what the quote says. And so that's what introduces the book. And then you're introduced to the character of Ignatius, who, you know, knows a ton about the Middle Ages and Middle Ages philosophy, and especially his favorite philosopher.
Boethius. How do you say
that? Boethius?
Boethius?
I feel like it's one of the guys in Gwar.
Boethius.
I got one of the guys in Gwar.
Boethius the Mighty.
It's like a war name.
And... So you might, at the beginning of the book, have this impression that Ignatius is like a genius that is misunderstood, and that all the people around him they're just against him, and that he's really the hero who's going to do amazing things as soon as they recognize how smart he is. Turns out that's not what happens, because Ignatius is a piece of shit. He thinks he's really fucking smart, but he isn't.
There's like a few people who do not think he's smart.
That's actually called the world. And he's a hyper-educated cunt.
Yeah.
He's a dummy. He doesn't understand how to, like, fucking make hot dogs.
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
He's very educated, but he's dumb as a bag of bricks.
He's a stern condemnation on the academic world. Ooh.
You know. So in Ignatius' favorite book is Consolations of Philosophy.
It's Boethius.
By Boethius. As I was reading on Wikipedia, apparently the book A Confederacy of Dunces is largely, the way it's written, mirrors Consolations of Philosophy and the way it's set up and the way its chapters are organized. And there's sort of an extra little thing making it similar to that book.
Well, Easter egg.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Well,
super nerd Easter egg. Because who the fuck would know that?
No one.
I almost even heard of Boethius before this book.
No, me neither.
I mean, I listened to Gwar, but I don't know. I don't know, I remember his name.
I remember his solo albums.
Yeah. It's a B-sides thing?
That's Scum Dogs from Hell. Isn't that one of their songs?
They were all Scum Dogs.
Yeah, Scum Dogs. There you go. I tried to listen to Gwar. Not so great.
Last album, not that bad.
You go see Gwar. You have to experience
Gwar it. Gwar is an experience, not something to be heard.
Yeah, it's a multi-sensory
something to behold.
Next time Gwar's in town, we'll all go.
Great.
That's going to be great.
You're going to go, mate. You're going to love it. You're going to shut your
face. Mark it down.
Get covered in fake blood.
Gwar, if you want to send us tickets. Blood.
Yeah, send us those free $20 tickets.
Please, Gwar. We'll be eternally grateful. Since you're talking about, let's have a beer. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Any one of these things. They all work.
They do all work. Okay.
Except for this one. Save that for later.
All right. We were talking about dumb Ignatius is. So let's.
It's all these right. beers.
Well, okay. I want to
really
try.
We're all thinking the same.
I want to try this one because right. I've seen this one in the store a lot, but I've never had it. A reason to go actually buy it.
All right, Nate, you purchased this one.
So this is from Lagunitas, and this is called Hop Stupid. Because they even spell it wrong.
It's the biggest bottle I've ever seen.
That stupid. It's a really big bottle.
It's a 22. Yeah. It's an 80% alcohol IPA that they hopped the dick out of. Yeah. It's 102 IBUs or
what
something like that.
What was your nickname in high school, Nate?
Hop the dick out of?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's because I did things some rabbits that I regret.
Hop, hop.
No one called me Hop the Dick Out of. That doesn't even make sense grammatically, man. Can't believe it.
Ooh. It's bitter than thought of, but, I mean, hop is in the name, so yeah.
I like it. I like it. It's not, I don't think it's overly bitter.
It's 8%.
And it's got like a creep, like, I don't know, you're looking at my glass, is like going bananas in there. It is fizzing like a motherfucker. Like, look at that shit. That's just going and going. Where are they coming from? I'm
very excited.
It's gushing.
Chemistry. Oh, my God.
Science. You ever see that or hear that Insane Clown Posse song, Miracles?
Magnets?
Yeah, exactly.
Magnets?
We're like, rainbows. Magnets. How the fuck do they work? That's very basic science, mm-hmm. Violent J.
It is not for people who are Insane Clown Posse fans.
This amount of fizz right now would just hurt Violent J's little mind. Violent J, if you want to tweet us, you can. At Malcolm Gladwell.
For all their ridiculous stories, like, they always seem like very nice people.
Yeah, I don't think they're bad. I mean,
Juggalos, they seem like...
I mean, I think it's weird that you would eat Monopoly and crap out Connect Four. I mean, that's a strange thing for your body to do.
Some people's digestion just works different than
ours. Yeah, it's like, my mouth is Milton Bradley, but my asshole is Parker Brothers.
You know, they don't believe in Monopolies.
No. We're moving on now.
Yeah.
So
capitalism.
Hop stupid. Good beer. Does not taste 8% alcohol, I'll tell you that.
That's true.
Though at the same time, I don't know how much of this I'd be able to actually drink. It's pretty fucking bitter.
Mm-hmm.
It is intense. I like it though. I've had it before. It's a pretty sweet IPA. And the characters are without exception all fucking stupid.
Like every character is just so dumb.
Yeah.
We won't even go into every single character, but let's talk about Ignatius's mom, who totally just enables his stupid bullshit. Just letting him be a complete baby.
Yeah.
And taking care of him and cleaning up after him while he treats her terribly. He's like, mother, you know, the dust buddies in the hallway are becoming the size of golf balls. You must do something about this while he's literally sitting in his room. You know, writing his stupid, you know, meditations on philosophy, which are all really stupid, or just mostly letters to his arch nemesis, Myrna Minkoff.
/ ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, /
ex-girlfriend. It's like a frenemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he hates her, but he also wants to, like, get it up in that, even though he's, like, morbidly obese.
But the mom, because the father's dead, or whatever... And he's the only spawn. Like, I think that's kind of implied that the mom babies him because that's all she has in this world. And she's like a deeply religious New Orleans woman.
All right, so the mom is like a total enabler on all these stupid things, but she doesn't know what to do with him. I mean, but she also doesn't like. I mean, she doesn't know what to do with him. She just lets Ignatius do whatever he wants, including doing absolutely nothing, which is how he likes it.
I fucking envy the guy. It's a sweet life.
He
doesn't work. He has no job. He does nothing.
He is, like, too superior to have any other job.
Thinks all the jobs are beneath him.
Well, he did have a job. He had worked at some point as a professor, like an adjunct professor.
Was he, like, a TA?
Was he a TA? I thought he was a professor. But, yeah, he worked at a college. And then, like, the kids basically rebelled because he wouldn't grade their papers.
Yeah, he thought they were all too terrible to even read.
So he was just, like, throwing them out of the window.
Yeah.
That's a fucking funny scene. It is just absurd what a dick he is. And the way I wish I had the book in front of me. Like the things he says are actually really funny. Mm-hmm. The insults he hurls at people for like their inferior intelligence.
They're eloquent as shit.
And he's funny. He's funny in that sense. But he is ultimately a pile of shit.
You know, he loves going to movies. He never misses a movie.
Shitty movies, so he can make fun of them.
Exactly. But he doesn't go to the movie because he enjoys the movie. He goes to the movie because he wants to like shout out during the movie how bad the movie is.
He's the
worst person.
Yeah. So he goes to see shitty movies. You would think it's like he's expressed poor judgment.
He has. Yes. Speaking of which. Our next beer, I also brought this one. This is called Poor Judgment IPA, but it's P-O-U-R.
However,
that's a good pun. Uh-huh. So it's definitely, you know, and dunces definitely exhibit poor judgment. Drunk guys.
We've exhibited that. What episode number is this? How many times have we exhibited poor judgment?
This is
28.
Excuse me.
28 episodes of Poor Judgment.
Jesus Christ.
Tell us about the beer, Nate.
All right.
Yeah.
It's called Poor Judgment. It's by Gray Sail Brewing in Rhode Island. It is 6% alcohol by volume. Yeah, that's all I know. No,
that's
so
it?
It's more. In 2013, we teamed up with our friends at Poor Judgment Bar and Grill in Newport, Rhode Island to bring their house IPA with the finest German malt and Eureka hops. This beer gained, there is an exclamation point, okay? It's apparently Eureka Hops has an exclamation point.
Is it after Eureka?
Or it's after
Eureka exclamation point hops, period. That's like the end of the sentence, but they put the exclamation point because, you know.
Eureka is like a branded name of hops.
Yeah, apparently. This beer gained so much devotion that we now offer PJ, Poor Judgment IPA, to go. If you're an IPA fan, you can use some.
As opposed to
Poor Judgment.
There.
There you go. To go at this.
Where is it from?
Rhode Island.
Oh, that's unlikely.
Right, why would anybody go there? Anyway, wait, which one's mine? This one's mine, right? Anyway,
super light colored IPA. Not a super strong IPA smell I'm getting off of this. Kind of grassy.
Not super strong.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a citrusy, tropical flavor in there.
It's IPA.
It's a very light IPA. It's more like the Big Easy, you know. It's down there in terms of every attribute. Very mild session kind of beer. You could drink a whole bunch of these probably, which is not to say bad or good. Just is.
It just is.
It's not gonna beat the shit out of you like that beer we drink next week. That was super strong.
Last week or the week before.
I don't know. You'll know. Go listen to us. Yep. You'll listen to our back episodes. Mm-hmm. All of them are available on iTunes or our website, drunkguysbookclub.com. So
anyway, Ignatius, definitely poor judgment. I feel that Ignatius is kind of like an internet troll just before the internet. Because he really wants to go and experience things, but not because he wants to just enjoy it. It's because he wants to tell everyone how bad it is, which is another way of saying how superior he is, because he recognizes how bad it is. He needs to tell everyone, as if anyone else cares about his opinion, which is like what the internet is.
That's pretty astute, actually.
You know?
He's a douche.
Everybody is just on the internet constantly sharing their opinion. It's like, that's Twitter. That's like every single tweet ever written, everything about Facebook is my opinion of blah blah blah. No one cares.
Cool.
Except for the tweets from Drunk Guys BC. They're pretty on the mark.
Right. They are definitely good. They're definitely the best opinion.
Because most of our tweets are just like, I'm drinking a beer.
Yeah.
That's our tweets.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, there's no judgment there. It's like, I drank this beer.
Mm-hmm.
Please like it.
Or you can find out when our episodes are.
Yeah, could be Tuesdays.
Could be every Tuesday. You'll have to check Twitter to find out that it's every Tuesday.
You might find yourself there very late some Tuesday nights as we get our shit together.
It's still technically Tuesday.
Could it be Wednesday this week? Spoiler, it's still Tuesday.
Yep.
It's still Tuesday. Yeah, so you're right. He's an asshole. He just wants to shout out his opinion because he thinks it's so much more valuable than everybody else's. Yet his opinion is only... The only thing that he bases his opinion's validity on is his education, mm-hmm. which is in his fucking obscure nonsense. He's a medievalist.
It's not even a thing people care about.
I mean, that really isn't a subject. That isn't even a part of history that people give a fuck about. People seem to really be interested in, like, ancient history, like classics, or...
It's the taint of
near
history.
History. It is the taint of history. Wow.
Whoa, man.
That is... Actually, the taint's pretty shallow, but...
It's the perennial history.
The perianal cavity of history. Jesus. That's hurtful. This right now, there's some fucking poor schlub in a field in Germany just dusting off a gothic amulet, and he just got the sense someone insulted me again.
I have been besmirched.
I would not pretend he's listening to this podcast, but he just felt the insult. Oh, again? Why, Hans? Why every time? Yep, that's what you did. That's what you did there, man.
Mm-hmm.
And wait. Yeah, he just hung himself. How do you feel now?
What?
That strongly. Nice. Well, yeah. Ignatius is a fucking prick. His ideas are... I mean, he's funny, though. And the things he points out about the movies are funny and accurate. Like, he's shitting on these stupid rom-coms from the early 60s. And
yeah, they're objectively
garbage.
Terrible, like, movies.
If you
but
look
he up, goes all the time. He goes every day.
Yeah. If you look online... people have figured out what movies he was watching.
They did? I read that, yeah.
Yeah. They're
I
like, oh, he was
based on real movies.
Yeah,
people figured out it must be this movie.
He was based on the year, based on what he says. He clearly was watching, like, this shitty Doris Day movie. Or it's definitely one of those Doris Day movie. So he watches garbage.
Recognized as Billy Rose's Jumbo and That Touch of Mink, both Doris Day features released in 1962. In another passage, Ignatius declines to see another film, a widely praised Swedish drama about a man who is losing his soul. This is most likely Bergman's Winter Light, also released in 1962. Another passage he recalls the night Ignatius was conceived. Oh, in another passage, Irene Riley, that's his mom, recalls the night Ignatius was conceived after she and her husband viewed Red Dust, released in October 1932.
There's probably significance to each of those titles. I mean, like, I just can't see, like, Minkoff and Mink. That can't be.
Has to be, yeah.
That can't be random. I don't know if Billy Rose's Jumbo was about hot dogs.
Sounds like it, yeah.
I don't know any of those movies. They are really old, random, shitty movies.
Never
right?
read anything about
that. Like, they were garbage vehicles from the 60s. This book is weird to date. It's, like, weird to date when this book is from. Because it's published in one year, but it's written in a very different time. When it takes place... in yet a different
time. Earlier time.
You know, so the book came out and it won the Pulitzer for fiction, the Pulitzer, in 1981, but Kennedy Toole died in 1969. It's his only book, really. He has another book called The Neon Bible, which is this other piece of shit that he had written when he was a teenager that was in a shoebox somewhere or something like that, like one of those kind of deals. Mm. So basically, he's a guy who...
The Go Tell a Watchman?
It's the Go Tell a Watchman of it. Yeah, totally. Except it's less Klansman. So he wrote this book, A Confederacy of Dunces, in like 1960-something, like 64, 65, and tried to get it published, and nobody gave a fuck about it. And then he killed himself, not directly, but partially because of the failure of the book and other things. Killed himself when he was like 60-something years old, 30-something years old, 32 or something like that. He wasn't very old. His mother, that being her only child, who the father is, I mean, very much like Ignatius, the father is not around as far as I know. She's heartbroken and finds the one copy of this manuscript and goes around trying to get someone to publish it because, you know, her son was a genius and we need to see his work in print. And if you read the introduction to at least the edition I read, which I don't know what fucking edition that was, but the person who received this manuscript that ultimately moved to help get it published talked about how, like, you know, you get these kind of things every once in a while.
He was an English professor at Tulane, right? Or at a university.
That sounds right, yeah. I have no idea what his name was, though. It wasn't a name I recognized. I'm sure he's super famous, whatever, but I didn't know it. So he's like, you know, you get these manuscripts and you kind of, like, wait for the point where they're so terrible you could rationalize and be like, all right, I'm not going to read this anymore. But it just kept getting better and better. And then he helped get it published. And that process took a couple of years. So he might have gotten in like 1975, 1976, and then gets edited and published and whatever, and comes out in 1980, and then wins a Pulitzer. So when you're reading this book and you think it's a book from 1980, it's really from like 1965. This is a lot. This is a huge difference culturally and stylistically for novels, which makes it an interesting kind of novel nonetheless. You know, or makes it an interesting kind of novel. Just for that. The fact that it won this prestigious award. I don't know if it did it deserve this award. I don't know. But, you know, that's another part of its legacy. I think that's why it's famous. Yeah. You know, like, how many other Pulitzers can you name? How many Pulitzer Prize winning novels can you name that aren't the ones from the last, like, 15, 20 years?
Do you think he would have won it if he hadn't died?
That's kind of what I'm getting at, I guess, yeah.
Did he pull a Bradley Knoll?
Bradley Knoll, wow. I think Bradley Knoll was pretty good.
Yeah, but would they have been as good?
I don't know what you're talking
about. Bradley Knoll is the singer-songwriter responsible for the hits of Sublime.
If he had not died, would Sublime be as good today?
Because Sublime did not become commercially successful until he died.
That's true.
I mean, they were fine. They're like, you know, for like white guy California ska, you know, cool. But if he hadn't OD'd on heroin, would anyone have given a shit?
Well, there's something tragic about him dying young and all that shit. But Bradley Knoll
like,
did write some good tunes.
No, Nirvana was like a big thing before Kurt Cobain
Nirvana
died.
Was a fucking huge thing before Kurt Cobain ate that bullet.
But was Sublime big before Bradley Knoll died?
No,
they weren't.
So did he pull a Sublime?
Is this an example of there's no such thing as bad publicity?
I don't know. That's true. That'd be like if Bradley Knoll fucked a little kid. Did he pull a Matt Lauer?
I mean, I think if you're talking about a musician who fucked little kids, you really should be talking about Michael Jackson. But he didn't fuck a little kid and then die.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And then sold a lot of records.
He
sold a lot of records, fucked a little kid, sold a lot of records, fucked another little kid, repeat, and then died. And then sold a lot of records.
But then Bradley Knoll did not do that much, and then he died, and then they did a big deal. Like, this dude, would he have been as impressive if he wasn't dead?
Well, it's, you know, one difference...
If his mom did not tote his manuscript from publisher, like, this is my dead son's manuscript.
It's a really good question, and I think one difference right away, Sublime has, like, 4 albums with Bradley Knoll, whereas, not that I, like, I mean, I'm not going to defend Sublime, but I will defend Sublime. And they had a bunch of albums with a lot of really good tunes, and some garbage, some terrible, shitty songs.
Every band's got... garbage,
especially on their first album or two. Mostly, especially bands that came out in the 90s, early 90s, where it was like, oh, we're on like douchebag, you know, Turnstile Records, and it's like a guy who has a printer, a record printing press thing in his garage.
Sweet frosted tips.
That's a little later. So they, you know, they had that sort of thing. Sublime has a lot of songs, whereas John Kennedy Toole really just has this one book.
Yeah,
the other book that he has, the Neon Bible, he wrote when he was a teenager. So it was a draft, a piece of shit, that it's only because his mother found it in his fucking room that it got published. He did not seek to publish that the same way he sought to publish A Confederacy of Dunces. And actually, something interesting comes out of that. That should lead us into this next beer. This beer works on every level. Another Flying Dog beer.
Mm.
This one I brought.
Oh my.
It's called Family Drama Imperial Pilsner.
That's so many Pilsners.
So the reason why it works on a couple levels. One, like, in the book itself, there's the family drama of the Riley clan and Ignatius' shitty relationship with his mom and all that crap. But in real life, because of, according to me reading like Wikipedia, basically, the Napoleonic Code stupid laws they have in New Orleans, inheritance laws are convoluted in Louisiana, where they're not, like, parent-child. They're more like parents, like... And then, like, siblings and cousins and stuff somehow have more stake. So basically, when John Kennedy Toole killed himself, the mom went around and got all the people who would have been eligible to stake a claim to sign off that they didn't give a fuck what happened to this book. Because who gave a shit? He was their, like, weird cousin or nephew or whoever that killed himself.
The guy that never left his room.
Yeah, and then the mom publishes this book after years of work, and it becomes a bestseller, right? And then says, like, all right, well, now I found this other manuscript for the Neon Bible, which I've not read, but it's a short read. It looks short, but I'm sure it's not good, and I'm kind of hesitant to read it because I really enjoyed The Confederacy of Dunces. I thought it was just, like, so ridiculous, and I'm sure the other one's not nearly as good, and I'd rather let him retire in my mind with a winning average.
1-0.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. That, but the, everybody then, of course, was like, oh, no, not this time. We want our stake. And it took, like, over a decade to get that next book published, but to negotiate the deals with everybody who had some sort of claim.
I'm sure it didn't actually make that much money.
Well, it probably did make money because, I mean, think about what...
Did it even recoup the lawyer's fees that it took to negotiate all the different things in the family? Or did each family member actually get back what they probably spent on
theirs? I bet the person probably who lost was the publisher because they probably had to, they probably paid advances to all these people to get them to sign off on it because this was the only other work by this dead author who published his only book. Huge bestseller, published in a bunch of languages and won the Pulitzer.
This is like the
which publisher wouldn't fucking cut off their tit to publish that book?
The second Catcher in the Rye or some shit, whatever the guy's name is. Salinger. Like, he had another book.
Sort of that sort of thing, yeah. What do you think of this beer, by the way?
It's okay.
What is it called?
It's all right.
Family Drama. So, family that's...
It's an Imperial Pilsner, so it's basically a really big Pilsner.
Flying Dog.
Yeah, which is to say it's a really big, crisp, fairly hoppy beer. Pilsner is a fucking lame style. I don't like Pilsner.
It's better than IPA.
Depending on who's making it, Pilsner and IPA can kind of get close to each other.
Pilsner just kind of means beer.
Well, Budweiser and Miller and all those other beers, at one point in the distant past, were all Pilsners. They're like the Chernobyl babies of Pilsner. You know, they're just, ugh, it's terrible, terrible beers.
What's like the one Pilsner that exists? It's like a Czech beer.
Pilsner Urquell?
Yeah, that's it.
It's fucking garbage.
It tastes like beer.
It tastes like you took a pint of beer, and then you stood it a considerable distance, maybe 10 feet, and then you pissed into the cup.
That's what like.
And then you knocked it over, and then you filled it with water. And then you're like, there you go. That's what Pilsner tell us. In all of those big American... I mean, I think Pilsner's a lager. All those big American macro lagers are shitty Pilsners. They're just bastardized Pilsners. Now, for a person like a home brewer to make a Pilsner, that's actually pretty challenging. Because to make a beer that is really light and crisp is hard. You know, like, that shows mastery of the skill of brewing. Well, like, to get it that clear, like, when you homebrew to make a beer that clear is not easy without having...
It's clarity a thing to worry about.
I mean, for Pilsner, certainly. You know, like, a big stout, who gives a fuck if it's a little murky, right?
Well, I mean,
you
can't tell. Those are supposed to be, but never thought about it.
I mean, it's very easy to do with industrial equipment where you just have, like, a fucking whirlpool that filters out all the particulate that's going to make it cloudy. But yeah, when you're brewing in a fucking bucket, which is what most people do, you're not really going to have that luxury. So Pilsner is like a good show-off beer for a home brewer. I'm not a fan of it, the style. It's kind of a little too blah, a little not exciting to me.
I mean, to me, it just is beer.
Pilsner is like making the best vanilla ice cream. Like, I like vanilla ice cream, but like if I'm going to say, like, what's the best ice cream I ever had, I would never say it was a vanilla ice cream. You know, like, vanilla ice cream is great. But, like, I'd want something exciting and interesting.
Certainly.
You know, and making a vanilla ice cream is challenging because it's so simple. Like, you have to really have every component done just right. If you fuck up one thing a little bit, you fuck up the whole thing because there's no room for error there. So I feel that way about Pilsner, too. So it's kind of like, it's all right. Nothing special here.
It's fair.
And that's how I feel. That's how I justify my drinking.
Everything here is reasonable.
So going back to Confederacy of Dunces. It's a funny book. It kind of reminds me of when we did a while ago about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like, there's not much plot. There's not much that there's like.
And it's then just this sort happens, of. This it's just sort of really shit. Silly all the way through to the point where you almost don't. So because it's so silly all the way through, anything crazy could happen at any time. And so what the character does doesn't really seem that. But what the character does isn't having a big impact on their overall whatever story arc or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. So, like, you almost don't care that much. Because whatever is happening now, crazier shit is just going to happen in the future that may be just totally random. Like, meeting, like, you know, Ignatius, he has to finally go get a job. This is, like, one of the key things that happens in the book. He has to finally go get a job because his mother, who was drunk, Ignatius back home from a bar, and she was drunk. She hit a building and has to pay to repair the building, so... She finally forces him to get a job. So he goes and does, like, the stupidest things in the universe.
He works at a Levi's factory.
Right? That except it's not Levi's. Levy's.
But it's fabrics.
It's a pants factory. You know, it's they make basically jeans. And his job is what to do? Filing?
He's doing filing,
but he's so superior. He's like, I'm not going to file this, but he says it in a much more superior way and just throws everything out.
Yeah, all the filing he throws away.
He just throws them.
And he also starts a workers' revolution.
Yeah, he does, yes.
But they all give up on him because he's full of shit.
Which is fair.
Yeah, he is full of shit. And then he leaves that, and then he goes, you know, he's looking for another job, and he ends up pushing a hot dog cart, and this is like for a lot of the book, pushing a hot dog cart, but he doesn't care about actually trying to sell any hot dogs, and he's completely incompetent. So
he just eats the hot dogs.
He sells like a grand total of one hot dog the entire book. And I'm sure he eats a ton of them.
Oh, he's constantly eating them.
Constantly.
On some covers, he's holding a hot dog.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's just, you know, pushing this hot dog cart around. And then eventually dresses like a pirate.
To try and sell hot dogs.
Right? And meets a gay sailor.
Oh, the whole gay sailor subplot is super weird.
Yeah, it is definitely.
There's some weird dated stuff in the book.
And then.
I mean, not just dated, but it's bizarre. It's just like, this is a strange thing that's happening.
The whole book is bizarre.
Yeah.
It's also just because everyone in the book is a fucking idiot.
You know, and so going back a little bit, the manager of Levy Pants, he like doesn't want to actually manage the factory because he thinks it's stupid. Well, he thinks it's stupid. He just like doesn't like it. He makes him so anxious because he hates his father. It makes him so anxious to have to actually like manage it that he just doesn't. He just doesn't want to ever go to work. Just like, just go do your thing. And yet his wife, he also, because he's, you know, he and his wife have like a competition or, you know, who's sort of more dominant in the marriage. Both of them, the wife actually wants the factory to fail, even though that's their source of wealth. She wants the factory to fail because that will prove that he's an idiot, making her the superior one. Yet at the same time, that's where she doesn't work. She's just rich.
Purely out of spite.
She's purely out of spite, would rather see the business fail.
So she can talk shit to their daughters.
Right, to prove that, you know, he's no good. And then...
Everyone is terrible.
Like, everyone... And that's
literally
just,
everyone in this book is terrible.
It's just a confederacy of dunces the whole way through.
It's almost like it's the title.
Yeah.
But almost. Who's the genius?
No one.
Right, you see that?
It's a confederacy of dunces. Question.
There is no genius. They're all stupid in their own way.
They're all snowflakes of stupidity.
They're all exceptionally stupid and self-absorbed.
That's for sure. But then why include that epigraph? Why not just say in Confederacy of Dunces, which is a funny title in and of itself, without any context? It's a funny
maybe
title.
They include it because he is, by all means, like the main character, and people are conspiring against him in the book. It's because he thinks he's so smart, but.
Or is it because he thinks they're conspiring against him?
Exactly.
And he thinks they are,
but like, in some ways they actually are because they don't understand what the fuck is going on with him.
Well, they're not conspiring against him. They're conspiring against like his stupid machinations, like his lazy schemes to get out of
like,
doing work.
They cannot see, as the reader would see, that both of them are stupid.
True, but they also don't say he's a genius. Like, everybody acknowledges that Ignatius is a fucking asshole idiot.
Yeah.
So he thinks he's a genius. I mean, that's my take on it. Like, he thinks he's the genius. He thinks the world is against him. And it's just funny because he's not.
But
correct. That's
not really what's happening, because he is also a giant fucking idiot. And just everyone else also happens to be a giant fucking idiot.
It's like all those books where each chapter takes the perspective of a different protagonist.
Game of Thrones,
but like a lot of other ones, where it's like every chapter is like through their eyes, where it's like you kind of make it, but as the person reading it, you kind of get that everyone is a fucking idiot. And they do not know, outside of their own vibe, what the fuck is up.
But in this book, it's third person. It's not like there's an unreliable narrator.
I mean, they're all kind of unreliable narrators.
But there's a narrator who's an omniscient narrator.
Is there?
Yeah, the narrator. Like, it's not like there's a... It's not like...
I mean...
It's not like it's like...
There's an omniscient narrator, I guess, but each chapter, the omniscient narrator is kind of tethered to a character.
Well, it
it's
only
not
shows
an
what that...
omniscient narrator.
Well, it only shows what's happening there, but that's kind of how third person works.
Yeah, but, like, you can kind of get a vibe that it's kind of through that character's perspective.
I guess you can tell
it's omniscient that whatever one they're narrating through is that they are also an idiot.
Well, yes, you could say that for every character in the book.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. It's a confederacy.
That means they lose the war.
Yes.
And they're pro-slave. We have one more.
We have one more, yeah.
Nate, well, who wrote this? Oh, Jimmy wrote this.
Did I? What is it?
Oh,
it's, it's a beer.
It's a beer. I've never seen the beer before.
I've had it, actually. It's juice. Of course, I've had lots of beers.
Juice?
Yeah, we didn't eliminate all the juice. All
right, what's it called?
It's called Blithering Idiot.
By Weyerbacher? Weyerbacher? Weyerbacher. I think they're from
Pennsylvania. Weyerbacher.
Where are they from? That's American, though. Are they from Pennsylvania or somewhere like that?
Probably.
Where all the krauts settled? It's a barley wine.
Eastern Pennsylvania.
Ah, I called it.
These fucking krauts.
You know, to me,
I'm getting... If you're a kraut, fuck off.
The taste
or follow us.
Or give us
we know how
give
well
us crowds five stars.
Follow without question.
Right?
Give us 5 stars on Goodreads. On iTunes. 5 stars on iTunes. It's a barley wine, right?
It is a barley wine.
That is
no
boozy.
Barley wine ale.
What I'm getting from it is banana.
I totally get that too.
I'm yeah, like,
I smell
it does
that.
Taste like bananas. That's weird.
That's a
it's not like, bad, but it is strong.
It's thick and as we learned from Nate a while ago.
Meaty?
It's veiny. It's jaw-stretchingly thick.
Cut the corners of your mouth.
God. There's really not a lot of taste here.
It's not as
it's a bitterness.
As a barley wine would normally be.
Yeah, I've had some. We've had some crazy
barley
wines.
It doesn't have all the fruit vibe.
This is strong, though. What's the ABV on this? 9%? 10?
Ooh, 11.1.
Wow. All right.
Also, weirdly specific.
Yeah.
0.1, yeah.
11.1. Like, 11 wasn't good enough.
There must be some sort of law about that. I think after a certain point, you're not actually... I mean, it might depend on the state, actually. But at a certain point, you don't have to actually put the alcohol content. So, like, certain really strong beers, like the Dogfish Head ones that are 15, 16, 17%, they don't tell you on the label what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
I don't know why they don't. I don't know why they wouldn't.
There's no reason not to. It shouldn't be a surprise.
I agree. I think that's weird to not tell you. But I think they just kind of... I think for those companies, they were like, well, that's a little mystique, you know?
Maybe that's not a thing you need to be serious about.
I
agree. You don't want to be
right.
Mysterious about the ingredients, but not like how much alcohol there is. That's kind of weird.
Well, you can kind of guess. It has to be higher than this amount. And if it was higher, if it was above this, because they tell you this amount for their other beers, you know, like they tell you 13, 14%. So if it's higher than that, it must be higher than 14%. And if it was higher than like 20%, they start bragging because now you're getting back into like fucking world record strength beer level, you know?
I guess.
And how many 20% alcohol beers have you had?
Less than 5.
And they were all...
Less than 3.
Terrible.
Yeah. They taste like shit.
Yeah, I can't have that too many myself. I've had quite a few in the high teens, 18%. 19%. 20%, I've had maybe 3 above 20% alcohol. Yeah. So if they were going to get into that category, they'd fucking totally tell you.
I can't imagine it's why someone would not tell you.
It doesn't make sense to me either, frankly, but I think there's a legal requirement about it. Otherwise, I think it would tell you. All right, so the book is full of blithering it hits. Good choice.
Clearly.
Do you think it was like a pity Bradley Nowell Pulitzer thing? That's bothering me.
Like, why did it win the Pulitzer?
Yep.
Is it really
would it have won it if he wasn't dead?
I mean, no. My feeling is no. Not that I'm the expert on all Pulitzers, but, I mean, it is a different, and it is a creative book.
It is.
For sure.
Interesting. It's very
but
interesting.
I thought, so it's like totally crazy and off the wall, but that kind of really wore off after the first, I don't know, 50 pages or so.
I mean,
it's starting to just feel
not that crazy.
It started
well, it's
50 to just
years old in terms
yeah,
of the writing.
Certainly, certainly.
I started to lose interest in it just because, you know, it's just like, well, lots of crazy things happen, but nothing seemed to really matter that much.
I mean, maybe it was different when it was published, but it's like each character was like an over the top caricature of whatever. Like the black guy was.
He was a little embarrassing.
So he was like almost like Massa kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but at the same time, he was also like, it's like I don't have a Massa type term for this, but he was judging all the characters around him because he'd only taken that job to avoid the vagrancy charge or whatever the fuck it was.
But like, certainly it was.
And he's like cleverer than everybody else at the same time, and he's playing stupid.
Was
you know, it's like
he
a
though?
Like a blackface character.
Yeah, he was definitely a blackface character. I don't know. I don't
That's
think
the,
I don't was, think this guy was racist by any
no,
means.
No, he's a guy who
was just
born
like he wrote
in
a book
30s and
yeah.
lived in New Orleans. You know, he's kind of things are going to be a little deep.
Different. Yeah,
that was one of the elements that I was like,
this is kind of uncomfortable
right.
to read this vast chapters of this guy saying "woo" every other word.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
I don't think it detracted from the story.
No, I mean it makes it seem more of a. It's
a period.
Yeah, exactly. It shifts it from being like just a book that's fun to like, oh, this is a book from this time, which does change how you respond
story.
To it. Yeah, sure. I don't read books about Puerto Ricans. That's West Side Story.
Yeah.
I'm not being racist. I read Oscar Wilde. Aren't they Puerto Rican?
Dominican.
Whatever.
Same. Not racist. Whatever. Not racist. Same thing.
We're all the same.
Remember in 30 Rock when Jack's like, I don't want to call you, and he's dating Salma Hayek. Like, I'm Puerto Rican. Like, no. You can't say that. I don't think we call them that. That can't be right. So we drank 5 different beverages. Let's just say it. Unorthodox question. Unorthodox question. What's the stupidest beer we had today?
Well, I'm not even sure how you judge that, but, right. You know, Hop Stupid does have stupid in the title, so it's a contender for sure.
Poor Judgment has too clever of a name to be stupid, though the beer is actually kind of crappy.
Yeah, not that great.
Big Easy is also a shitty beer. Not shitty, and if Beta wants to sponsor us, I'll say it is good.
I think the beer I liked the most, although I liked Hop Stupid.
Me too.
I also like the Weyerbacher Blithering Idiot. I like that one too. They're both good.
Those might be my 2 faves as well. Family Drama was okay. I just thought it was a little, something was a little missing there. I don't know what it is. I think just Pilsners are just not meant to be Imperial. Big Easy was kind of bleh. Poor Ginger was bleh. Blithering Idiot was just not, I liked it, but not after having had the other 4 beers first. that's a lot of beer to put into your body.
I don't remember any of these.
Well, we could taste them all again real fast. Hop Stupid's probably the one. I mean, I've had 3 of these before. I've had 3 of these before. Hop Stupid's probably my favorite.
It's not bad.
No, I know you don't like IPAs. And ever since the episode when you said you hate IPAs, my wife,
all of them.
Every time I have an IPA, my wife mentions how Jimmy hates IPAs.
She's a very smart lady.
Is she?
Yeah.
If you're listening, honey, leave a review on iTunes. Give us 5 stars.
All right. Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc.
Or visit our website at
drunkguysbc.com.
No, that's not it. You don't need to shorten anything.
All right, we're going to do it again, right?
All right, follow us. Just visit our website at
drunkguysbookclub.com.
Great. Well, listen to us next week when we read
The Alienist by Caleb Clark.
Yep, definitely.
It's about aliens and shit.
Yeah,
we
definitely.
Have to read it.
We gotta read it first. Cliff Notes. Oh my god, let's do it right now. Okay, thanks for listening.